Hey, you are listening to The Workplace Leader. This is the podcast where we go behind the scenes of corporate real estate, talking to industry experts about how they shape the next generation workplace.
Continuing with the specials, here's the first of the two snapshots from the hot topic discussions at the LEGO Workplace Symposium. As Kirsty and I outlined in the first episode of our three-part special, you will hear voices from different companies and diverse views on the challenges discussed. The first roundtable discussion was around the question of what is our end goal, in the workplace or with the workplace?
And different organizations will have a different motive. If we're not clear on what that motive is, then I don't know what we're trying to sell in the first place. When I started talking about hybrid 2 years ago in the middle of the pandemic, there was just no appetite for this conversation because we felt that it was, people are going to come back September, October. Let's not worry about this topic. No. It's just noise in the industry. But obviously 2 years later, it has shifted how people want to work. And we've started now delving into this topic. And the piece that I don't feel like we as a team are aligned on is what are we trying to do? Are we trying to create an experience for colleagues to have this flexibility? Or are we actually thinking, how does the flexibility save costs, square feet, running cost, all of that good stuff? And I suppose maybe depending on the audience you're talking to, you adapt that argument. So I'm just curious, what's the end goal?
Which hardly makes us hybrid. I think what it does is introduces a lot of uncertainty without enough push for programs that then enable people leaders to be effective wherever they are. It doesn't help employees feel settled in either environment. And so the end goal from the business is bring everyone back. End goal for workplaces is to represent that there is a need for flexibility. Mm-hmm. We don't align on the vision because, I mean, ultimately, what's the opportunity here? From workplace aside, it's to enable people to perform at their best. From our leadership side, it's not even saving costs because we could. Yeah. Had we shut down, we could have saved a ton of money. We could have reached some easy sustainability targets. It could have been a good storytelling opportunity. Mm-hmm. Talent attraction. We're seeing retention numbers dropping. So, I don't know. I don't mean to just sit here and complain, but it is like I know their end goal is very clear and it does not align with people needs. And I don't know where to go from there.
So there's a paradox.
Oh, yeah. Because in the panorama that I was talking about with the top leaders, most of them had a vision for more flexibility. Yet when the executive board joins, the conversation shifts. So there's a disconnect.
Yeah. And how do you, I mean, no one's going to challenge the board, but how do you? Because you need to know what their motivation is.
Well, yeah, I wish they would, because that's your responsibility as a leader, right? Because otherwise, why are you there?
But isn't it a belief, as you say? It's a company culture. So if you believe in the office, then you believe in the office. We do the same. Mm. And that is belief. And if you don't believe in that, find somewhere else.
Yeah.
But you don't, and that will maybe be an issue, maybe it won't. Because it also, is it about me or is it about we?
Yeah.
I think that's one of the important things. It's been very much about me and it's still a lot about me. But to get a society running, community running, it needs to be a we. Mm-hmm. So I think that is the balance here. So I think it's more down, what do we believe in? It has consequences, good or bad, but it has consequences. But until now, I don't think that many companies have been firm in, yeah, we have come into office, but there has been none consequences if not.
Yeah.
So people are voting with their feet and hoping that it would be different. But the top management, of course, if that is their belief, it should be the belief, and then they need to then take on the consequences and start having that.
But they'd also need to be ready to give a reason,
yeah.
I feel like. If you say, oh, there's going to be consequences, it's not something that people are going to believe in. So if there was a shared, why are we doing this? Mm-hmm. And people would believe in it, I think they'd be much more invested in the we and be like, yeah, of course, bring your best working self. That includes you enable your colleagues as well. And you're a team and you need to get that spirit going, but give people something to believe in.
Mm. Yeah.
The why has to be clear. And I think the why now we're finding, we had a clear why when we developed our future of work strategy, which for us went beyond just hybrid working. So we had four key beliefs that were aligned to hybrid working, the role of offices, travel, and meetings. And in service of, when I think about an end goal, in service of our purpose. So we say the world we want tomorrow starts with how we do business today. And that's about how we behave as associates. So what does that world look like? That world is an inclusive world. It's a world where the planet is healthy. And it's a world where everyone is thriving. So you can see how something like travel, there's a clear connection to the planet is healthy, mm-hmm. because we'll cut our CO2 emissions, right? By minimizing travel and in starting to shift behavior to traveling for purpose. Mm-hmm. Everyone is thriving. Now that's interesting because that might mean something different to many of our associates. If you ask someone like, what does thriving look like for you? Your answer is going to be different than yours, mm-hmm. will be different than yours. But or there has to be some standard isn't the right word, but like some shared, we believe that this is what it looks like mm-hmm. to be thriving in your work, mm-hmm. to be thriving as a business. Mm-hmm. So I think for us, the end goal is clear. It's about making sure that we map everything back to it, including measuring the right mm-hmm. things.
Can I ask out of curiosity, because has that actually changed with the pandemic, or would it actually look exactly the same if the pandemic never actually hit us? Because I think you would probably still like the people are engaged and there and strive and there and so on. So what has actually changed with the implementation of hybrid work?
I think it's a great question. So for us, I can talk about the inclusion piece. So every year we have an inclusion and diversity week company-wide in fall time. And last year, so in 2021, we hosted a panel by associates for associates talking about how to be allies in a hybrid working place or workplace. Wouldn't have been something that we ever talked about. Now, granted, we've always had associates in different markets that have had different working arrangements, some who were already working hybrid before the pandemic. But the focus of the conversation and how to kind of build capability in these different spaces, like we're putting attention there in terms of driving those conversations. So that's travel. It was a moment of reset, mm-hmm. certainly. Mm-hmm. We traveled a lot, and it's because we're so decentralized. The role of offices, I think we had a clear idea of the role we wanted our offices to play. But with hybrid working, like you have to look at things like occupancy, and we are moving to neighborhoods. So that's, you know, a change management mm-hmm. effort in itself. So I certainly think there were things that came out of what we learned from the pandemic that we had to make change, like we had to bring about changes. So people felt like they weren't just returning to the same experience because we're not the same people.
And maybe also the focus, because I was touring a little bit inside and showing some of our data and the research and so on. I mean, I actually presented how much flexibility our employees wanted in the future. There was one actually making a comment, but what if it has actually been like this all the time, but you never asked us? But then the pandemic came and you ask, do you want flexibility in the future? How much would you like to work in the future or home and so on? And then now this is our answer, but we probably also wanted the flexibility before, but you never ask us, right? And I think that has maybe been a shift in focus from, okay, now we actually ask about it and we actually care and really want to be curious around it.
Right? I think that's an interesting point. I think for us, because we are very similar companies with very similar end goals, mm-hmm. for us, it gave the chance to do this globally because we have a lot of talks about inclusivity, well-being, your best working self, you know, really enabling our employees. However, culturally and globally, it differed very much. If you look at Asia, we've mentioned, you know, they were never allowed to work from home. The policies were mm-hmm. different. The Zoom in, what did that mean, was different. And I think from our perspective, post-hybrid gave us the opportunity to say, we're elevating this to a global standard, a global policy, focusing mm-hmm. on everyone around the world at the same level, if that makes sense.
Because I think it isn't just about change in our workplaces. Like we are changing the fabric of how society is run mm-hmm. right. in some way.
Yeah.
And I think with that, there's a great responsibility as well, right? Yeah. So as more people, I'm fascinated by the Edelman Trust Barometer, if anyone's mm-hmm. familiar with that report. Mm-hmm. But over time...
What is it called?
Edelman Trust Barometer. Mm-hmm. And over time, what they've shown is as trust in other institutions has fallen, trust in business has risen. And so we do have a responsibility as organizations. I mean, Tim said this group that's gathering here this week, we impact more than 1 million people.
That's right? Insane to me, right? That number,
so
that scale.
Like we are changing the face of societies in some way by making different decisions. But I agree with you. It has to be about the we and not just the me, because there's a community aspect as well. Like our businesses operate in varying communities, from urban environments to suburban environments. Our reach extends far beyond just our own.
So I love that you bring up that point, because when we talk about hybrid or just anyway ways of working, the conversation keeps coming back to office or not. And the opportunity is so much bigger. You know, like also advocates for flexibility. I don't think that they're advocating for get rid of offices or get rid of people interacting in person, but it's the deliberate part of when you need to come together, what's expected of you. And if the end goal is that we're productive and we're part of a society, why aren't we then, as these leaders and big companies, then actually enabling that? Because right now, what we're doing is just back to an office. And the argument is because we build culture in the office. It's weak, because then you're not building community and you're not minding sustainability and you're not taking advantage of all the other opportunities.
Yeah, I see that point very much. I think it also has to do with fear. And so people were used before the pandemic. Community, the culture was always there. It was super visible. Whatever office you went in, it was fully booked. Everyone was there. You could see your people. During the pandemic, everyone was online, on screen. Still, you were all in the same boat. And now you don't know anymore if you where people are. And this fear of that the fabric of the company is falling apart. I'm not saying it's happening. Very likely it's not happening. But the fear is really real. And that's why some people say people have to come back to the office. And employees said, no, leave me. I'm fine. I still will stay with you. But I want to do part of my work at home. I want to have this flexibility. But leaders in general, they don't see it anymore. And they want to go back to the situation, but they still remember. And so this is coming back then to the end goal. The end goal is to have this community with in a new situation. So without having everyone all the time in the office. And that will take very uncertain and uncharted and scary moments, I think, in the coming years. And it's also years, probably more than quarters or more.
And we may find that after the years, there is an impact and we end up going back to what was the world before, because that might seem quite attractive. We don't know. I was thinking about your comment about consequence. And you know, one of the consequences is that people are going to leave. But there's another consequence that if companies don't adapt, there's this whole entire workforce that's going to be looking for work in a different way. It's not going, they're not going to want to sign up to what other generations before them signed up to. And so attracting talent is going to become an issue for those companies, because, you know, obviously you have generations leaving the company and then you have other generations joining. So how do we still remain an attractive employer? So that, and I'm trying to like grasp some themes that would prick the right ears to go, oh, hang on, there's a problem being identified. So it's not just about the space. It's like, what's the business impact?
But also the opportunity, right? Because right now when we do recruitments, it's okay, who lives within an hour from the headquarters or from a certain office? And then we kind of search the market for talent there, right? But moving into a more hybrid where we can actually work more across and so on, it's around the right talent. It's around the right competences to bring in. And then I, in principle, don't care whether it's in Hong Kong or it's in the US or it's somewhere else, right? It's the right skills that I'm looking for, right? I think that's a huge opportunity, to be honest.
But it is something in trust also. I'm just saying, because putting up guidelines saying 2 days, whatever, 3 days in office, then people are like, don't tell me what to. So if we just set it free.
People would come to the office.
Exactly. So I think maybe there's something in that also that we're now trying to control. No one wants to be controlled. That's just how we are as humans. So maybe if we dare to take that position saying, okay, let's see. Because people are voting with their feet now. So that is why you're having consequences and rules and all that. But if you dare to see what will happen if I just let it go, maybe then people would be in the office 5 days a week, because I'm deciding by myself.
Yes. I mean, in human psychology 101, right? Yeah. Like when we first shut down the offices, when the pandemic started, people were up in arms. How dare you make me go home and work? Then we reopened. How dare you make me come back? And so it was this back and forth. And it's interesting because the conversation previously didn't happen, but the executive all over the world, so they never saw them. Are they in an office or not? Are you meeting your targets or are you not? Mm-hmm. Even during the pandemic, if we're talking about trust and performance, mm-hmm. our goals, all of our targets from the design teams, from all teams, were all met and for most part exceeded. Mm-hmm. So there was no impact to operations. Yet still now, when it comes to the discussion, what is hybrid? Well, it is 3 days in the office. And that's and employee listening survey. I think I started ranting about this last night. Yeah. Now I remember what I was trying to say.
It was a conversation.
I was expressing my thoughts. So the scary part is that on the topic of trust, trust was the number one thing in that there is lack of trust in leadership. And the scary part is the intent to stay is still really high.
Wow.
So people are displeased and disengaged, yet they're not leaving. So Trina, when you said that leave, I'm like, I wish they would.
Do you ask that question outright? What's your intent?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Stay or leave? It's like within the next year, I intend to stay, and then on a scale of 1 to 10.
Yeah. Don't you think people answer that truthfully?
Yeah, I did.
I would say, yeah, I'm leaving within the next year, you guys. Bye-bye.
But, you know, I mean, that's a Germany Works Council signed-off survey. It's anonymous to no end.
Yeah, is it local or is that a global?
Global.
Because interestingly enough, I think also culturally how open people feel to answering differs depending where in the world.
But if you do it regularly, these surveys, then you also see the trend. That's the thing. Yeah. You can compare, is it going up or is it going down? And that is the input. An absolute number doesn't say so much, but you see, is it changing?
But how do you see? Because one of the things that we actually measure and when we actually define the end goal is also productivity. We, of course, talk a lot around engagement and talent attraction and so on, but we also want to be a more productive company. And when we look at the data, we actually believe that if we actually manage to combine the best of both, I think you called it a Lego, then we are actually probably witnessing the biggest productivity gain since the internet or something like that, if we actually do it right. But there are a lot of risk here that can go wrong if we don't do it right and if we don't manage it and if we don't kind of provide the right environment, the right technology and so on. But we have a well-defined target that we actually believe that we can actually gain productivity.
No, I like very much what you're saying. We talk about risk, and I hear it also all the time, but the risk is non-existing. We have seen it. We have worked. We can work. Everyone is very adult and mature and to the point of having choice and having the flexibility, but it takes time. So, and we see quickly within our company, then often people start now already saying, we only started 1 or 2 months ago. Yeah, okay, I don't see enough people at the level, or how can we attract them, or you, or then we have all kinds of language around it. But people feel this, of course, but why do I need to? And over time, people want to come back for certain things where they see this is really attractive to be together, but not for everything. Okay. And some people also want to be 5 days back, and they should have a place. That's perfectly fine.
Our executive sponsor on the Future Work, she has been saying to many of our leaders, build the associate experience you'd want to be a part of, and they will come. So stop focusing on, and I've been counseling from a communication standpoint, like, I don't want to hear the phrase return to office anymore.
Yes.
People have returned to offices, maybe just not at the frequency in which you're trying to guide them to, but they have, and don't let that be unseen, like you're seeing that. Yeah. So let's lean into this, the reality here, like no more return to office.
Yeah.
Spoken at a town hall. Talk about the hybrid experience, the experience you want people to have when they come, and not even just about the office. We have beautiful offices, right? But it's not just about the office. It's like, what experience do we want people to have when they gather together? Because that's the power of coming here.
Oh, even worse, return to work. I also
said, return to work. Yeah.
No more.
I've been sure for the past 2 years. Yeah. Yeah. These grays can't just.
It's really hard, though, because many leaders who are speaking to our associates in public forums are using that language. Yeah. But it, I think as someone also who's returned to the office and I'm starting to practice hybrid, I'm like, there are a lot of my colleagues who have returned. Like, this isn't about the return anymore. This is about people returning in the way you expect, you expected, and it maybe not matching up. And then the why gets harder. So I actually don't think the why is hard to articulate in terms of why we should gather together. I think the why around how many days or how much, what percentage of your time, that can be a very hard why to articulate. Because people, if it's not ground in data, then people see through it.
Very good point. I really like that point.
This has been my soapbox for the last 2 weeks.
Stay on it. I love it. It's cool. The, you mentioned, I didn't look up, was anyone going to say something? I don't want to dominate the conversation. Okay. You mentioned something about there is no risk. Yes, and I think there is a risk if we keep focusing on that one factor about hybrid, which is how much of it and where. What I'm not seeing is then the development of the processes and training and expectations of what comes next now that we are in this hybrid environment. And I don't see it being addressed in the future either. And I see that risk there in that this is when you do get disengagement from people, but not because they're not in the office, but because you're not catering to changing needs. And that is where... where I'd love to go by the end of the year.
But also take something now, it's another discussion, but the in-meeting hybrid, right? If we don't manage to actually add some technology that can kind of make it inclusive to actually join a meeting from remote, for instance, that would actually be super disengaging, right? So I very much agree that there is actually some risk here. We work on roughly around, it has changed a little bit, but roughly around 20 initiatives across HR, real estate, and IT to actually support new ways of working, to actually say, okay, there are some pain points here that we somehow need to address, and we need to experiment, and we don't have all the answers, but let's see if we can somehow work across and solve some of it. Right.
I just want to add to the risk piece that's flying around in my head. One of the other power dynamics shifting, right? That's what's happening. So whereas previously... you didn't even ask. Like, it was Monday to Friday, 9 till 6.
Default, yeah.
No, it's in your contract. That's what you do. That was the power that companies held over their employees. And that power dynamic's now shifted to employees deciding. And that's frightening.
Yeah.
Like, where do we go from there? They get this much power and they can walk with their feet and they get to decide where they want to go and work. And if there's other companies that are going to allow them to do that, they'll go there. So that's a massive risk when you think about the power dynamic shifting.
Yeah, I think so. The power dynamic is also why leaders and managers, they feel it the first. Because during the pandemic, people would say, okay, we're all in the same boat. But now, you had a reason to be in the office because you could oversee your team.
Yeah.
And it sounds super like last or 2 centuries ago. But that was really what was happening.
Yeah.
And if you let it go and let it move the power to the employees or associates, then you also start to question your own role as a manager or a leader.
What does maybe, that look like?
Yeah. Or am I needed? Yeah.
I like how everything's like interconnected to the hot topics. It's like friction points we need to activate leaders. It's role models. You can't really tap into the why without solving all these other things. How important is cost going to be looking forward? Can we invest? I mean, we've seen investment in great spaces, believing that's where culture is going to happen and people will come if you offer them. But yeah.
Probably also a lot of good learnings from retail, actually, right? Where everything moves online and how to create that experience and actually get people into the store, right?
Restaurants, everybody ordered in during the pandemic. Have people stopped going to restaurants because they can get food to their homes? I don't think so. They want to be in the nice place. So if we can offer that and give them some freedom... and a reason,
And a flagship store.
Yeah. That helps, yes.
Nicole, that was an interesting one that you connected it to retail. Can you say more about that and how?
No, I think there are some good learnings here because you can say retail has moved into some kind of a hybrid marketing channel, right? Yeah. If you go backwards 15, 20 years, it was very much a physical store, right? But you needed to collect and buy all your stuff. Now you do it also online, right? And how do you then kind of, especially from a brand perspective, right? How do you actually build the brand? Mm-hmm. How do you build the connectivity to the brand from a consumer perspective?
Yeah.
We have the same challenge here that we actually want to kind of have that sense of belonging to our employees, right? Mm-hmm. By building environments. I started at EXAN during the pandemic, and at first few weeks, I thought I worked for Microsoft because everything was Microsoft branded in the Teams environment, right? So how do we actually build that kind of the brand recognition and connection to our employees? So I think we can learn a lot from the retail. Yeah. And you can probably also, if you ask out around your journey on the consumer and customer part, learn a lot from that.
And then in retail, we see e-commerce and shops coexisting and companies not being mad for people shopping online, it's still turnover, right? So how can we move that to productivity as well? Okay, you can work online as well.
Oh, I love this angle. Mm-hmm. This is
showing what people stick online, the convenience factor. Amazon's going to be there tomorrow. So what's the office equivalent versus what are you going to that store experience? What are they going in for the new products to try aside? Something quite specific about why we shop online for something which is easy and convenient and the experience, something where it's a bit more
exclusive,
tangible. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, and how do we play that back into the working, not the office, the working equipment? Like, what's at home?
Mm-hmm.
Easy, doesn't need the brand new bit versus what's in the office.
Yeah.
And that really connects to that overarching, you know, nudging people toward choosing things for purpose instead of by default and getting into that mindset.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Empowering them to, oh, this is why I'm making a choice.
Yeah. It's not just taking things away. It's just rethinking about why. Again, you mentioned the travel. Why? I mean, building relationships, still a relevant reason to travel. This is a great example of that, but not just doing it by default, you know, so really thinking in the bigger picture of things.
Following is now the second group chat that looked at hybrid pain points.
First of all, I would like to explain that we have for now adopted a full flex concept. So we don't force employees to come back to the office. Actually, it sits with the responsibility of the employee together with their team and the manager to determine whether they will be working from the office or will be working from home. And the problem is at the moment is that it's very hard to predict how many people come to the office. I think over time we will probably learn from patterns, but at the moment it's very hard. So what you see that we end up with having empty offices at the moment, which isn't attractive, of course, because it's quiet. It doesn't feel okay. When it is so quiet, people are experiencing sooner noise problems, etc. So that's one of the problems. And at the second issue that we see happening at the moment, and in all honesty, I don't know whether it's good or bad. I don't have the answer yet, but what we see is that roughly 65% of our workforce in Amsterdam is returning to the office, meaning that there's still a large group of 35% that continues to work from home.
Mm.
And what shall we do? Shall we try to nudge those people to go back in the office? Do we think it's fine to leave them working from home as long as they are productive? So that's sort of an interesting question that we are challenging at the moment.
So really the challenge is around how you can maintain this position of allowing a fully flex environment or kind of policy or approach, and yet, you know, whether it's a case of kind of nudging or changing the policy, is that really kind of what you're struggling with? Or
So we really used this year to learn how we experienced the hybrid way of working from both the employee point of view but also from a business point of view, because I know honestly it also should work for the business, not only for the employee, but I think it's equally important. So it's really, what shall we do? Do we customize maybe in the future our hybrid way of working guidelines or policies, or do we just leave it as is and we accept that it is fine that some people won't come back to the office maybe anymore, or maybe just a few times a year or a month? I think that's really what we want to learn from.
Mm-hmm. And how about you guys?
I think for me, we are at a point of an inflection point almost, right? We are creating the future of work and we are in the middle of it. So it's flying the airplane while we build it.
Mm.
And for me, the most important thing is that we keep trying, because if we do nothing, we really move backwards, because I don't think we can go back at this time. We can't go back to where we were before COVID. But for me, that also calls for, if we look at friction points, what culture will you have with 35% at home for, as you say, you have for booking.com? How will we create that culture? If we look at let's take our office in Lyngby, we have in Denmark, 50%
of people there are people that relocated, so non-Danes from 47 nationalities.
Wow.
If we open up for hybrid, they, which is understandable, might want to go home and work for their home country. Mm. What that does that mean for our culture? What does that mean truly enabling hybrid? That's a new culture. Another friction point coming out of that is, what does that mean in leadership? Mm. How do we onboard people? There are so many questions in just addition to creating the technology, creating the workspace. Mm. And that's what we are trying to, I mean, big questions, right? But to solve for and to build a newer point, to learn and then adjust along the way. I don't think we have all the answers now. We need to learn and then evolve.
Right. Mm-hmm. And is that a similar approach to you guys? How are you approaching these kinds of challenges?
Mm-hmm. It's really interesting. Yesterday, someone said, you guys should already be ahead in terms of workplace. But given the pandemic, we're all just reset. We're all starting over altogether. And so it's a really humbling experience to kind of rediscover what a workplace is. And one of the friction points that we're seeing is that with COVID and with working from home, you know, the day starts much earlier because you no longer have to commute. And so you have meetings starting at 7:30 or 8 a.m. Mm. And sort of that, it's hard to sort of tell kind of personal life versus work life and being able to find that balance. And so now that we're coming back into hybrid, you know, it's interesting, finding the time to carve out again to even commute back into the office can be challenging and can be a friction point from preventing us to even coming in.
So one of the things about, you know, that people have around the world, so many studies have kind of backed this up, is that, you know, people are happy to have reclaimed that time that they used to put into the commute. But like you're saying, that's gone again now.
Right.
It's actually been filled with more work. Yes,
exactly.
Yeah.
Right. It's funny because it's not filled necessarily with, oh, I have a longer breakfast to spend with my family. But it actually, I mean,
that feels like ridiculous now, doesn't it? Because that was in the first instance, that's kind of what we all felt. But then, yeah, that's gone, right?
Right. Exactly. Mm. And then even just the decision point of like, should I come into the office today? Mm. I have a presentation. Mm. And from an equity perspective, from a hybrid equity perspective, you know, being able to have everybody in London and in Dublin, we're a highly distributed company and offices around the world, it feels better to actually be more present through your laptop where folks can see your face rather than going into a meeting room where you're literally a dot. And so that's the other friction point in really enabling hybrid equity within our meeting rooms and really allowing those that are offsite to be heard and seen equally as those that are onsite and together. And so I think it's just determining what's best done in the office, what's best done at home, and really understanding what the friction points that everybody is facing. And we're all individually learning, but collecting the data across the company so that it can help us make better decisions and optimize those two experiences.
Mm, that's very interesting. And so actually, kind of your question, Mark, about that 35%, that presumably they're the people who are actually kind of choosing never to come into the office at the moment. Is that right? And you're kind of thinking about how can we bring them in? And I guess part of the problem with that lack of equity in those situations where you are kind of collaborating with people on and off site kind of adds another barrier, doesn't it? To bring
I think it's actually, we need to learn from those people because now we assume, and there must be a reason why they don't come back to the office, but we don't know the reason. Perhaps they think they can be better work from home because they're more productive or it's better, contributes to their well-being. I don't know. We need to really research why those people are staying at home and if there is anything that we can do to also get them back in the office, if we care about that, for instance. And I think that's why we now approach it as a pilot with a whole research framework and model. We collect a lot of data from different kind of sources to get information and to learn from these kind of things. Because on one end, we're talking about the group that wants to work from home for a certain reason. But there are other pain points, like the group already explained, hybrid meetings, for example, how to deal with a healthy office occupancy, all these kind of things. So interesting times, but that's, I think, why it is so key to, you know, to use the coming year. But I think it probably won't stop after this year. It continues, but to use the coming years to really learn from this new hybrid way of working, how we can improve it over time.
And to Camilla's point, actually, and your point as well about what's best for the company, the organization, what's best for the employee, and what does that then do for the culture that you want to create? Because
But hey, culture eats strategy for breakfast. So culture is also our business. And how do we create that? And what we saw during the pandemic in data is that people work more siloed. Their network shrinks. We know that then the belonging suffers. If your belonging suffers, you are less loyal to the company. So you might leave. And if we look at data from, I mean, a lot of different companies did similar surveys. Between 40 and 50% say they are likely to change that job within the next year. So we want to create a culture. We want to create a culture of belonging, whether that's I sit from home and I have the belonging, or I work hybrid, because otherwise we lose out business-wise. So we need to combine this. And I guess, so of course I have the HR perspective, and many of you have the workplace and the more physical views on this, but we need to combine that. One of the things that I've been saying this for 2 years to so many people, but that is, where's the virtual coffee machine? How many things happens at the coffee machine where you start talking about your kids and you end up innovating and having good ideas? How do we do that virtually when we are not together? And I would love to ask you workplace designers and real estaters about that. Where is the virtual coffee machine? Because we've got to combine that in the future. And I haven't found the solution.
Have you guys had any thoughts around, or any things that you've been doing to try and encourage that kind of connection?
Yeah, well, virtually about coming back to the office, of course, with the pandemics, it affects everyone on so many levels, personal, and a lot of people made life decisions, etc. So when we were planning, which we were throughout, because we didn't know when, it was unpredictable when we were planning going to activate the returning to the workplaces. And actually, some employees, of course, have the business involved in production, they have been in at the workplace all throughout, but very lonely. Others have perhaps joined the company these 2 years, but never met their team or their managers or their direct colleagues, never visited their workplace. And others have worked for the company for many, many years, but not been there for 2 years. So we said, okay, we have to work with two tracks. We have to work with health and well-being, because it is about feeling good, whether you work from home or whether you're at the workplace. And we have to work with, you know, the emotional connection to the location and embracing the offer. So what we did launch a theme, a health and well-being free concept, where we started actually in September last year with, it was called New Year, New Habits, because that's when our business year starts. So it was a lot of inspirational sessions and then actually workshop settings and coach one-on-one, all online. To support everyone to sort of build new habits and rethink. Our second theme was about mental well-being, where we had, it was a combination by external presenter, but also IKEA leaders coming in, sharing their approach to this, so that we're opening up conversations about it, because, you know, it has affected us a lot on all levels. And this new theme we just launched now in March or in May, and that one is out of the box and it's stimulating people to go outdoors and to meet also at the workplace. And in that launch, we also launched walk and talk paths, etc. So that in combination with a couple of campaigns that we run when we were highlighting, you know, it's not going back to same coming back. It's about taking the learnings and the insights you have gained throughout the pandemics and applying them to the workday. So think about, you know, you have the freedom to design your workday from the amazing offer there is. One-on-one meetings can be a walk and talk. You can plan for a yoga session in the lunchtime. Your team activity doesn't have to be in a meeting room. It can also be at the, for example, or in the forest. You know, so think out of the box coming back. And now it's up to you. So trying to empower and inspire, which I really strongly believe in that, because that's when you build, you know, the enthusiasm. And we asked others to share, you know, in our staff magazines, And like the 10 challenge of your day, you know, think different.
I love that. It feels almost a bit like going back on site feels like an off site.
Yes,
you know,
it's
that kind of connection and, you know, it's still very, very important part of work is reconnecting with your team and reconnecting with the workplace and exploring how things are going to be going forward.
Yeah. And I think that's what the workplace is going to serve in the future. Mm. That is that connection. Mm. That is being offsite rather than onsite. Right. It's different. You don't go in there to work and sit at your desk. Then you sit at home. So it is changing, right? So I love that way of thinking. It's
At the same time, I do think that there are also people, if they want to come to the office, that they have to do desk work, right?
Yeah.
Because you have people, they can't do focus work at home. They decide to come to the office.
And you need to have the office.
Yeah, I think we need to balance that.
Yeah.
And I think that's also why you need to do, again, research, because you need to understand, what is the ratio, for example, in terms of the different space types that we offer.
And that's right. And is that a desk when people are coming in and doing that focus work and then jumping on a hybrid meeting, or is that something else, right? And how are you approaching that? Because that's what I've noticed, people coming back into a traditional setup, they're just sitting at a desk and there's all these hybrid meetings happening. And on one hand, it's good because you get this kind of almost background noise that you didn't have before. On the other hand, it's bad because you're interrupting each other.
Yeah, our VP of real estate kind of positioned it like this is our second chance of a lifetime to be able to redesign the workplace. And I think what's interesting is that people are coming in to the office or working from home for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what's a really big challenge for us is that we're trying to optimize both scenarios, but both scenarios hold both tasks and functions.
Yeah.
And so for some folks, staying home is the only place they can do focus work because they're there alone. There's no distraction. There are legacy problems that we're still dealing with as well from a focus and ability to focus and collaborate. But then there are individuals that need to come into the office to do that focus work because they have roommates that work for competitive companies or they have children or, you know, personal reasons.
Laundry,
exactly.
You know,
right.
It's like your life sometimes does get in the way. Right.
Right. Mm. So in many ways, your office has to hold all functions still. Like, yes, we do need a place to be able to socialize, connect with the company, with each other, to collaborate. But I think it's understanding like, okay, if we're going to come in person and collaborate, what are the things that really optimize our in-person collaboration that through digital, that just isn't going to cover it and really allow our spaces to do that, to work harder for us. And then the other piece of it is like third places, places that, you know, really used to be seen as amenities and a place for social learning, et cetera, is now a place for those informal collaborations to happen and potentially even kind of that in-between space to do focus work. And so, you know, giving folks choice and variety and having our space types function doubly for us. So instead of a place for just eating, but it's a place for someone to be able to land and actually work in a more buzzy environment. So does it actually help us rethink how we design a cafe or how we design space? So that's sort of where we're at.
That's really interesting. And so really, so spaces are working, you're making the spaces work harder effectively.
Exactly.
So, and then also what I really love about what you're saying there as well is that, well, the implication is that we want to have the choice of many different types of space to do the many different types of work. And the implication then there is that there needs to be some form of, I mean, I guess the way that we look at efficiencies change then, right?
Absolutely.
Because it's less about kind of, you know, sweating the assets.
Totally.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And it also makes me think about, you know, the notion of sharing, right? I think that's an easier sell or easier thing to communicate and for people to understand when they also realize that they have access to all of those other places. Interesting. Before we finish, I just want to say, has anyone really kind of cracked that nut of that kind of, it was you, Karen, that said at the beginning, you know, the experience of people being in the space, being on, like being present in a room, in a meeting room, for example, and like feeling like a little dot versus people being remote? Have you?
I don't know if we cracked it, but first of all, we tried a lot.
Yeah.
So the guideline for us being in a room is that everyone in a hybrid meeting has their personal camera on.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you can never be in a room where you are just, you know, the big camera, because people get blurry. Mm-hmm. So everyone needs their personal camera. And then we have done some very basic inclusion guidelines. Mm. Because have you ever been in a meeting where you were at home, one, two people at home or remote, and the rest is getting a bag of candy in the meeting room? You can hear nothing but, right?
So, yeah.
So I think for our learning is just that it goes beyond being the small dot. Mm-hmm. It goes into things. It's new habits that we need to learn.
Right, and that sounds, it's like actually quite a simple.
Exactly, kind of it's so basic that you can't believe you need to say it. Yeah. But we are human. We need to just learn new habits.
Yeah, and on another thing, also what I experienced that. Indeed, of course, you need to have your personal camera on. But also when, for example, four people are dialing in from the office in the media room and two just remote, then you always see that the four people in the office, they say, okay, let's just quickly grab a cup of coffee. And they're just 1, 2, 3, 4 minutes late for the meeting.
Right.
While if you're just dialing in remote, you're always on time.
Exactly. That's another small, that seems so basic, as you say, but we need to be reminded.
Yeah. Right. That's great. We've been looking at it with three legs of the stool, where you have space, so things that you can design within the room, technology, so both hardware and software and the technology and the kind of video conferencing system, and then behaviors.
Thanks for listening. If you have enjoyed this episode of The Workplace Leader, there's more. Go visit our blog and have a look at some of the other topics we have covered. We've just released the definitive guide to workplace analytics, for instance. Or tune into our next episode of The Workplace Leader.